Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a food content creator talking about modernizing her Bubby's traditional recipes. She is a chef, cookbook author, and Food Network contributor. It's Amy Kreitzer-Becker. Amy, welcome to the podcast and happy new year.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. What did you cook up for the holidays this year?
You know, this year I went to my mother-in-law's and I cooked nothing.
Perfect.
That's such a blasphemous thing to say as a food blogger, but she's an excellent cook. And I just showed up with, she asked me to bring fruit, which is, you know, definitely showed off my cooking prowess with that. But that's all I did.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Sometimes it's nice. Like sometimes I go to people's houses for dinner and they're like, I'm so nervous to cook for you. I'm like, no, please don't. I am so excited for somebody else to cook. So.
Oh, yeah. She's an excellent cook and I'm always happy to eat her food. So I'm not complaining.
All right. Amazing. Well, you are best known for your creations on your blog and socials by the handle What You Want to Eat, which is so clever, by the way. I love that.
Oh, thank you.
Can you walk us through just some of the traditions that have shaped what we know as Jewish food today? I know that's kind of a loaded question, but...
No, Jewish food is super tricky to kind of explain. There's part like the rules of keeping kosher, and then, of course, there's all the holidays and traditions. So Jewish food's really evolved over time, especially as Jews have been forced to move around the world. So I think people tend to think of Jewish food as the Eastern European Ashkenazi food. We got our bagels, we got our knishes, we got our latkes. But then there's the Sephardic Spanish Jewish food, the Mizrahi Middle Eastern Jewish food. So it's this really broad, beautiful, you know, mix of different cuisines. And I think food can be different things. Like it can be Iranian and Jewish or Polish and Jewish. So I think people get, you know, a little confused with that too. So I think all those things together make this beautiful cuisine that we know as Jewish food. And it, you know, as it evolved over time, as Jews have lived different places, you've got like, I have Mexican Jewish friends who add chilies to their matzo ball soup. I think of Molly Ye has her scallion pancake challah. So it's really become a very broad, awesome food.
You mentioned keeping kosher. For those that maybe are not as familiar, what are some of the kosher guidelines that are a part of Jewish culture and how do they fit in with your life specifically?
Yeah, so I personally do not keep kosher. I don't hide that. And part of my whole brand is allowing people to be Jewish in a way that resonates with them. So if they want to keep kosher, great. If they don't, they can still be Jewish, you know. But keeping kosher definitely has led to a lot of the recipes we have today. So some of the basic guidelines are you don't mix milk with meat. So a lot of Jewish desserts are dairy free. So we've had a lot of, you know, cakes with oil in them, for example, that even though my family doesn't keep kosher, that's what we eat on the holidays. And there's no pork and no shellfish in kosher food. So not all the recipes on my blog I do in a kosher style, but I personally have never kept kosher.
And what, I mean, what did you grow up with? Like, what are some of your memories? Did you guys keep kosher as kids and that kind of evolved as you got older or never did? And what are kind of some of those, you know, traditions that keep a warm place in your heart?
Yeah, I grew up in a very Jewish town in Connecticut, but where I didn't keep kosher and most people I know didn't keep kosher. I honestly thought that was like a biblical thing, maybe until I was like in high school. It was a very weird thing. So like my, you know, family, we always had bagels on Sundays. I went to Jewish summer camp. We went to synagogue on the high holidays only, mostly to see what people were wearing. So that was kind of my Jewish upbringing. So I grew up with a lot of Jewish people. And so when I moved to I went to college in Georgia and there was like, a lot of people had never met a Jewish person before. I'm like, oh, this, I didn't realize this was the way the world was. So that was really unique for me. But then I was able to meet Jews of different backgrounds too. And, you know, from different parts of the world, I grew up in kind of a very, you know, everyone was kind of the same type of Jewish person. So that was really cool to experience.
As you've kind of, you know, explored your, you know, Jewish culture through food, how do you approach kind of modernizing some of these recipes while also maintaining, you know, the traditional integrity of them?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think all food has kind of evolved over time. One example I like to give whenever I do a food demo, especially if I'm talking about a very traditional recipe like brisket, for example, you know, I make a brisket that's braised in whiskey and coffee. That's I think it's really delicious. Yeah. But someone in the audience will always say, you know, they're like, that's not how my mother, my grandmother did it. And I'll ask, well, OK, well, how did she do it? And it's always like a can of Lipton soup mix and, a can of Coca-Cola, which is great.
Yeah.
But do you think like 2000 years ago they were using Lipton soup mix to make brisket? Like, of course not. Like, this recipes have changed and you can still, you know, have these traditional recipes, but make them fit for the time that we're in. And I like to think if my Polish ancestors had avocado, they would use that. You know,
sure.
They didn't have that. So I think you can, you know, have the traditional base for the recipe mm-hmm. and then make it your own. And I don't think that's a problem.
Well, what are some of your favorite recipes that you've kind of done that with aside from the brisket?
Well, latkes for Hanukkah are my favorite. I always tweak a latke recipe every year. Everything I've done, like a kimchi latke grilled cheese sandwich. I did a fried pickle latke. That one went pretty viral. So pickles are also very Jewish. So that one seems like it fits. But I tweak, you know, for Passover, I always have my traditional matzo ball soup. But just during the week of Passover, I'll make different variations. Like, I think any matzo balls, any soup can be a matzo ball soup if you believe. You just add them in there. So I tweak everything. But some things I definitely like traditional too. So
yeah. I mean, why do you think that's kind of an important part of any, you know, culture, food, you know, kind of evolving the cuisine, like keeping the tradition, but letting people that know that it's okay to, you know, have your own way of doing it or, you know, like kind of modernizing things, you know, as it fits with your lifestyle.
Yeah, I think people are so afraid that they just don't end up doing it at all. They're so, especially with like religion or very, you know, traditions that have been around a long time. They're like scared they're going to light the menorah wrong or they're going to make latkes wrong. And I'm like, especially with food, I'm like, it's just food. It's fine. It's like, if you burn all the latkes, just order a pizza. It's totally fine. You know, I think people just are so nervous about it. I like to give permission for people just to try and have fun with it. It should be fun. And celebrating where we came from should be fun too.
What are some of your favorite childhood holiday memories and what are some of those traditional foods that you do look forward to the most when you get into the holiday season?
Yeah, so certain foods we definitely only have for certain holidays. And I'm always like, why don't I make latkes all year? And then, you know, I look forward to them more when they're just for Hanukkah. So the first thing I think of is all like the smells, like the fried latkes, the matzo ball soup, the brisket. There's a lot of like distinct Jewish smells, I think, for the different holidays. And in my family, I come from a very loud New England, Boston, New York family. So there's always a lot of like five women around the oven poking at the brisket. Like, is it done? I don't know. It needs 10 more minutes. No, it's perfect. Yeah, so that's, I love that. And then my family's also like bakers more than they cook too, of course, but they're like love desserts. So we always would have just trays and trays of rugla and mandelbread and way more than you would need for the amount of people we had. So I always look forward to that too.
I mean, you cannot run out of food.
When we're done, it looks like you could feed another family. So that's how you know you have enough food. We eat it. We save it all. Don't we? No food is wasted.
That's awesome. Do you remember what was the first thing that you learned to cook, who you learned to cook it from? Like, were you allowed in the kitchen as a kid? Or was like you said, like all of the other women in the family were already taking care of that? Or like, how did your love of food kind of start and develop?
Yeah, no, I was definitely, I have fond memories of always being in the kitchen. I don't remember never being allowed, but always when it was time to clean, I'd be like, I'm tired. And like leave. And like, so to this day, I do not know how to clean. I'm like, I'm a terrible cleaner. But cooking, yeah, cooking, I could always do. So probably the first recipe I made with my mom was rúgula. That's one of her famous ones. I mean, I just remember she'd always have these orange, like plastic mixing, or what do you call it, measuring cups. She still kept like a few of them today. They're probably like poisonous. They're not like BPA free or anything, but like from the 70s. So I'd love like measuring with that and mixing everything together and then rolling out all the dough and filling them. So it's kind of a laborious process, but I loved all the different steps involved. So that was one of the first recipes I learned with my mom. And then my bubby, she and her mom were very famous for their blintzes, which is kind of like a Jewish crepe. So they'd first make all the pancakes, lay them all around the kitchen. So you'd have just like pancakes on towels, like on top of the fridge, like literally everywhere. And then roll them and fry them and then freeze some. So you'd have some for the future too. So I have just a lot of memories of organized chaos with like blintzes everywhere. But
blintzes for everyone.
Yes.
Speaking of your bubby, how did working through some of her recipes kind of encourage you to reconnect with your heritage in a deeper way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always took being Jewish kind of for granted, just growing up in a very Jewish place. I never thought of it as unique or something to celebrate even. It just was like a part of who I was. So my bubby's the kind of person, if you're taking up a new hobby, like I'm like, I think I'm going to take up tennis. Like she'll run to Marshall's and get like tennis balls and like tennis socks and send them to you in the mail. So of course, when I was like, I'm interested in cooking, she had my mom like scan all her recipes and like overnight them to me, like in a box, like so cute. So enough, these recipes are just, you know, writing for Food Network, you know how to write a recipe. These are not like that. So it'll be like brisket, season it, cook it. Like the end. I'm like, what does that mean?
No temperature. Like, no temperature,
no cooking. Yeah, no, literally nothing. And she was like, you know, like, I'm like, no, I really have no idea how to make a brisket. So I got to call her a lot. She's still alive today, too. I won't say how old she is, but she's...
I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
Yeah. She was like, don't tell them my age. I'm like, well, they know how old I am. So, I got to call her a lot and, you know, walk step by step through like what she really did to make these recipes. And I think that allowed her to kind of remember a little bit, too, because when you're doing it every day, it becomes just second nature. And that she was like, oh, yeah, that's why we do that. That's why we do that. So it was really special getting to spend more time with her that way. And then at the time, so when I started my blog, I had just moved from New York City to Austin, Texas. And that was when I really decided. So I was working at a consultancy and I was bored. So I started my blog just for fun. And I called it What Do You Want to Eat? Because I didn't think anyone was going to read it. And I didn't think that was like I needed to have a serious name. And I'm like, you know, that was in 2010 and I'm still doing it. So, you know, I was going to do a cupcake blog initially. This, again, 2010 cupcakes were like,
sure.
They were never going out of style. So I was going to do a new cupcake every week. I loved baking. I loved having theme parties. And I would have a cupcake to go with the theme. So I asked my brother if he would help me set up a WordPress site, and he told me cupcakes were a stupid idea for a blog and that I should do Jewish food. And again, that was like, I was like, what do you mean Jewish food? That's like, it's like saying to do a, you know, a blog on like, I don't know. It just seemed like so basic to me. I was like, what? That's so boring. But then he's like, ask your friends in Texas if they know, you know, what a knish is or what matzo ball soup is. And no one knew. So I said, all right, this is something fun to do. So it really allowed me to share recipes that I grew up with and traditions that were important to me with my new friends. And I was more proud of being Jewish than I ever was before.
I'm interested in this process of kind of like working through these recipes with your bubby, because like you said, there's no amounts, there's no, you know, temperatures. There's just like very basic directions because, you know, she does it all the time. So she doesn't have to write it down. Like how did you kind of work through all of that with her? Like in terms of like, all right, how much is the seasoning? How much is, you know, how long do I cook this for? You have to like go through it step by step with her, like on most recipes.
Yeah, well, that was kind of when I started to immediately kind of make recipes my own too, because I'm like, I can't follow this exactly because there's nothing to follow. So I'm like, you know, I'm getting everything I can from her. But she was kind of just like, you know, like when the dough looks right, I'm like, what does that mean? Like add flour to the dough looks right. So then I kind of had to figure out like, all right, if I'm writing this for a website that people are going to follow, I should measure the flour and then figure out how much I'm going to use. So even, you know, she couldn't give me all the answers because she's like, you know, when challah dough looks like challah dough, I'm like, oh, So with that, and then a year later, I went to culinary school, and that really allowed me to like understand why recipes work and, you know, like how much seasoning I should add, just because I felt like I knew at that point. So that really helped me a lot to make the recipes into something you could write down and people could actually follow and use.
So you start the blog just kind of as a passion project while you're, you know, working in the corporate world. So what ultimately led you or pushed you towards that decision to, you know, just kind of start over and go to culinary school?
Yeah. So I loved blogging immediately. It was just a really fun creative outlet. And I was like just spending all my free time like thinking of new recipes and working on my photography and buying props. And if you look back, they're like terrible photos. The recipes, I have to rewrite some of the older ones still. But like, you know, even with me trying, they're like, I'm like, what did I mean by that? But I tried. So I just loved doing it. And at the time, there was only like Facebook. So I would like write the recipe, post on Facebook, the end. So it wasn't as much time as, you know, as blogging is consuming now. Or people don't even blog anymore. They just put it on social media.
Right.
But so I was like doing that. And then I got an email one day I had an email address set up that my brother set up. So I got an email from a reader who said, you know, her mother had passed away when she was young. Her mother was Jewish and her dad wasn't. And she had started to make all my recipes. She thought a way to connect with her mom was to like through food. Mm-hmm. And this was like a huge light bulb moment for me. And she had taken photos of all the recipes she had made. And she had made every recipe I had done so far, which was a lot. Wow. Like I was doing one a week at that time. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is like amazing. I'm really onto something. This is, you know, very meaningful. So I knew I wanted to blog full time or do something with food full time. So at the time I was losing money on my blog. I was spending a lot of money on food and props and everything. And I didn't even know how people made money on a blog at that time. So I was like, all right, I can't just like quit my job and be like, I'm going to be a blogger. Like my parents will kill me. And also I have to make money. So I was like,
I have to pay rent.
Yeah. I was like, all right, I have to figure something out. But I was like, but if I quit my job to go to school, I'm like, my parents love more school. So I planned it out for a few months. Yeah. I'm like, no Jewish parents mad if I get more schooling. So I quit my job, but I planned it out for like a little bit. Like I saved money for a few months. You know, so I was like going to pay for school. And then I started working someone found my blog and asked if I did private chef work. And I said, of course, even though I had never done that. So I started being a private chef. And then I worked doing cooking demos at a supermarket, which was actually like one of my favorite jobs I've ever had. Like I could talk about that. I like loved it. I loved all the people there. Like it was just, I don't know, it was so fun. And then I also worked at a bar selling Jello shots. And that's where I made, that's how I really paid the rent. Cause like supermarket did not pay me very well, but Jello shots pay. So that's kind of what I did. So it was like I was like, all right, I'm in my mid-20s now. This is like kind of like wacky. Like I went to college and now I'm like working at a bar on the weekends and all my other friends were like going out having fun. I'm like, did I make the right decision? Like I was, you know, working at the supermarket in the evenings and going to culinary school during the day. But it was like it was a full year program I did. And it was one of the most fun years of my life. So I'm really happy I did it. And I met like the most interesting people I never would have met otherwise. And our culinary school was everyone from like high school graduates that were 18 to like 70-year-olds on their next career. So we'd all go out together. People were probably like, how does people know each other? Like, why? And like a very diverse group, like ethnically and stuff. They're probably like, this is a real weird group of people, but it was so fun. So I'm really, really glad I did that. And it really helped me like take cooking more seriously and like believe that I could do blogging more seriously too.
What specifically did you learn in culinary school that like you had not learned, you know, from the family recipes and growing up, you know, around the, you know, the food that you, you know, love so much?
Yeah. I mean, I think my family, they're not, you know, not professional cooks. And in school, we learned more about techniques. So we would follow recipes, but then it was kind of like, why does this work the way it does? And that really allowed me to develop my own recipes. And also like, you know, you know, when my bubby would be like, oh, make brisket till it's done. I'm like, all right. Like, does it, cause before I went to culinary school, I just had like, no, I was like, is that 10 minutes or is that like 10 hours? I have no idea. And then I kind of understand like, oh, why you braise brisket versus like sauteing it, for example. So that really helped. That was what I learned the most. And then I just cooked like all day, every day. So it just gave me a lot of confidence in cooking.
You mentioned, you know, one of those early emails from somebody, from one of your readers that had been, you know, making all of your recipes. What does it mean to you when you get messages like that or tags from people now on social media making your recipes and really, you know, being invested in the things that you are doing and putting out there?
Yeah, that's still by far my favorite part about blogging is connecting with people. When my cookbook came out, I went on a book tour and I went to like 40 different cities and I met people that had been reading my book, my blog for years. And like, they're like, oh, like, do you remember me? Like, I made Kugel for my mother-in-law and she loved it. I was like, I do remember you. Like, that was amazing. Your mother-in-law was tough. So like, I don't know. There's just like I've been blogging since 2010 and I still save all the emails I get in a folder. I've never looked back at them, but I'm always like, if I have a real like low self-esteem day, I'm just going to like read people saying how amazing I am. I don't know. Like, it just seems like a good thing to have just in case.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love hearing from people, especially around the holidays. I get a lot more people making my recipes and to see them being able to celebrate and a lot of people hosting, maybe especially during the pandemic, people were hosting for the first time and they were nervous about it. I would like guide them through it a little bit. And so that it's like super meaningful. And it's kind of why I started, not why I started my blog initially, but why I continued. And it's still like why I continue today is like to connect with people in that way.
So no regrets looking back, I take it.
No, I mean, it's like when I started my blog, I had no idea I'd still be doing it today, like at all, or that no one knew like what the internet was going to be like or anything, you know, like with like TikTok now and everything. But yeah, I love the way my career has grown throughout the years. And now I have a cookbook and I have a online Jewish gift store too. So kind of all goes together.
Yeah, absolutely. And the career shift has also landed you in some really exciting opportunities, including a spot on Guy's Grocery Games. What was that experience like?
Oh yeah, that was so fun. I'm like a big Guy Fieri fan. I always like people are like, how was it? I was like, Guy's the best. He's so nice. like he had definitely like spent time like looking at all of our blogs and like not just the first page, you know, and like had like very thoughtful things to say. So the whole experience was super cool. And, you know, I cook at home. I've never cooked at a restaurant. So I'm not used to cooking under a time pressure. I'm very leisurely. Like I put on a podcast.
Yeah.
I'm just like dicing onion. And they're like, yeah, all right, you have like 20 minutes. Like you better move. So that was the hardest part for me. But I would love to do another show like that again. It was super fun and challenging.
Scale 1 to 10. How nervous were you before those cameras started rolling?
Oh, I think I was just so, it just happened so fast. Like, I think I didn't even have time to be nervous. I was just like on pure adrenaline.
Sometimes that's the best way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think looking back, I was like, wow, that was crazy.
Yeah, if you had time to think about it, you might have backed out. Yeah.
I was just like, I have to do it. I have to do it. Yeah.
Just say yes.
I was like, as long as I don't completely humiliate myself, like it'll be fine. So.
It's like the private chef stuff. Just keep saying yes figure it out.
That's kind of how my whole career has gone. I've just said yes. Whenever anyone's like, can you do this? I'm like, sure. And then it usually works out.
It usually works out. I love that. When we come back, Amy talks about whipping up a mouthwatering menu for Food Network's digital series, Served Family Style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, speaking of Food Network, you and your mom whipped up a mouthwatering menu for foodnetwork.com, including apple cardamom cake, rainbow sprinkle mandel bread, and Yom Kippur breakfast blintzes. This is on the digital series Served Family Style. How important is it to continue to cook these passed down recipes with the women in your family?
Yeah, these recipes were super special because they were all ones that came from my great grandma. And ones that my mom was very interested in cooking, and she would follow. They weren't written down at all, like not even in chicken scratch. So she would follow my great grandma around, like writing things down. And, you know, they're ones we've had in our family for a long time. Now on my blog, not all my recipes are family recipes. So these were super special. And then I put my own twist on them, of course. They're not 100% what my great grandma made. And I asked my mom, and, you know, I was like, oh, what would she think of these twists? And my mom was like, I don't know. I'm like, just say she'd love them. We're on TV. Or whatever. They're filming this. But no, it was great. So it was super special. Like, my mom lives in Connecticut. I live in California now. So when I was actually testing the recipes, she happened to be in town to visit me and my daughter too. So I got to test them with her, which was really great. Like, I got her feedback. Like, I hadn't made blintzes with her in like years. So got to like go through them together and see what she did. And then my daughter was there and like got to like observe, even though she was only a few months old. But I think she absorbed it, you know.
Of course.
That was like just like a super special kind of full circle moment, since I started with my Bubby's recipes and kind of now to go be, this cool Food Network digital series with my mom making these recipes was just really incredible.
What was it like working with your mom? Had you guys kind of done anything like that together? And yeah, how did it all go?
She kind of joked when I first started blogging, I got invited to go to Google Plus and do some live videos, Google Plus, I don't think is a thing anymore. So they were live. And so she was just so nervous. The whole time she just stood there like, like a deer in headlights. And so she was, I was like, this is different. They're going to edit it. Like, you'll do great. And then afterward, when the videos came out, she was like, did I upstage you? She's like, am I the star? It like totally went to her head. She's like, showing it. Today she texted me from the hair salon. She's like, everyone loves our videos. I'm like, great. So yeah. So now she let it go to her head. She's a celebrity. No,
She might become a fair job.
Yeah. She was like, she was really good. And they brought us lunch and they were like, what do you want for lunch? I was like, whatever. And I was like, well, I have a few things I would like for lunch.
She's like, consult my writer.
Yeah, here's her. Exactly. She's like, oh, you need to pick out the blue M&Ms, please. but no, it was super fun working with her, and I would absolutely do it again. She's hilarious, and we just had the best time.
What were some of the twists that you put on some of these family recipes?
So the blintzes. So normally my Bubby would fill them with farmer's cheese, kind of like a ricotta type cheese mixture. So I wanted something similar, and I wanted it savory though. So I did a spanakopita blintz, and my family also have some Greek roots. So my mom's maiden name is Greek, and I thought that would be kind of a fun way, another nod to my family.
Sure.
And plus, like, who doesn't like spinach and feta and of cheesy course. Deliciousness. So that was that one. The mandel bread, my Bubby would always do with like a marmalade filling, and kind of something I've always loved to use. I like to add a lot of color to food, and Jewish food especially is very brown. I think the best food is brown, to be fair.
Thanksgiving is all brown.
Very brown, exactly. Like potato latkes, brown, chopped liver, brown, challah, brown. So I try to add color. So I try to make it natural, but sometimes it's not. So I wanted to add just some fun like rainbow sprinkles to mandel bread. And then I added chocolate chips too. So that was kind of a simple, it was the dough was hers, and then just added in just some extra kind of fun additions. And then the apple cake. So that was mostly her cake. She has a lot of vanilla and a lot of spices in the cake. So I added some cardamom too, which is more of a Middle Eastern spice that definitely more Ashkenazi Jews wouldn't have used. But I love the warm cardamom kind of love. Chai tea mm-hmm. flavor. So I added some of that. And then she would either not serve it with a glaze or do just like a simple lemon and powdered sugar kind of drizzle on it. So I did, because for Rosh Hashanah, you have apples and honey for a sweet new year. The cake has apples. So I did a honey tahini glaze, which adds Ooh. Like a real like nutty, sweet kind of topping. I'm a frosting girl, so I always like a glaze on everything too. So and then I think that added in a little more, again, with like the Middle Eastern, the cardamom and the tahini, and then I put some pomegranate arils on top too for color.
Of course.
Because pomegranate, it's a traditional Rosh Hashanah food too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a new fruit for the new year kind of a thing.
Okay. I love all of that. What about, you know, you mentioned your daughter. Do you hope to cook with her when she's old enough?
Yes, we already cooked together.
So oh, you did?
She's 9 months old. And okay. my husband and I both like love food. And we're like, but, you know, obviously you can't make kids love food. She loves food. She
really
eats everything. Like, it's like I was eating some like leftover Thai curry and she was eyeing it. And I was like, all right, it's spicy. Like, you can try it. And she loved it. She just like, really? I kept giving her spoonfuls of it. I was like, oh, this is good. This is, we got to keep this up. So yeah. So we, you know, in the morning we make breakfast together and she, you know, she's really into eggs right now. And she likes veggies. So she's not supposed to have too much salt. So we work with like other spices a lot, you know, just trying to get her used to different flavors and textures. So I can't wait. Last Hanukkah, she was born right before Hanukkah. So we had like all these traditions together that she obviously won't remember, but we, you right. know, we watched a cheesy Hanukkah movie together. Aww. And then we made Hanukkah cookies and she just laid there like a blob and I decorated them. And then and then I had latkes and she watched me eat latkes. So this year she can have a latke and probably can't help decorate the cookies, but she'll probably try to grab them. So I'm excited for some traditions with her.
Yeah, she'll get there eventually. What do you think will be the first recipe that you teach her to actually like make when she's old enough?
My cookbook is all desserts, and something I didn't really think about when I did the cookbook is that people love baking with their kids. So a lot of like parents and kids like made the recipes together. So definitely, I think my family, we grew up baking. So it'll be, mm-hmm. have to be some kind of baking recipe. Maybe arugula. I think it's, you know, she can kind of help me roll them and mix together and stuff. So there's some aspects that she can do and of course, eat them.
Of course, eat them. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite arugula filling?
Oh, that's so tough. I recently did one for Food Network so I love chocolate. And this mm-hmm. one had chocolate and pretzels in it.
Ooh.
So I added like a little like crunchy, salty texture. I love like sweet that. And salty too. Mm-hmm. So that's like maybe my new favorite, but probably chocolate in general.
Okay. Yeah. In general. Just, yeah. just when in doubt, chocolate.
Exactly. But I mean, I like cinnamon too. People, you know, was it Seinfeld or like the other babka? I like cinnamon too, just as much. So.
I mean, you've been developing recipes for foodnetwork.com. You've got this digital series. What's next on the vision board?
Oh, well, so, you know, I'd love a rematch on Guy's Grocery Games. I didn't win, but yeah, my steak was slightly underdone and one of the judges didn't like eggplant, which I just think is, you know, how can you go on the show not like eggplant?
But, yeah, so but also, that's like I'd
love
tough
a rematch.
Break.
Yeah, that was a bummer. But yeah, I'd like to, my cookbook is 7 years old. It's called Sweet Noshings. So it's all desserts. So I'd love to do a savory cookbook at some point when I have a little more time. But then, you know, it's an excuse to go on tour again. I did so many virtual cooking classes during COVID. I'm like, no more Zoom. I'm done. Like,
I'm like, you're ready to get out there.
Yeah. I'm like, I just miss like interacting with people. You know, blogging can be kind of a lonely job. You have all your internet friends and, you know, I work in my closet. So I'd like to get back out there again, too. And I mentioned I have my online Judaica store, Modern mm-hmm. Tribe. So that's something I'm really passionate about, like making more products that, you know, it's really hard to find cool Jewish products, which I think kind of go with the modern Jewish recipes. You know, people can really celebrate being Jewish in their own way. So this year we came out with our own Hanukkah pajamas that I think are super cute.
Oh,
and
love.
We have a menorah. So kind of we're coming up with a candle for Passover. So I'm working on more stuff like that too, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, you got to do the full, you know, Jewish food like merch line for
kids all the way up to adults. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, the pajamas have latkes and sufganiyot donuts
cute.
On them. So everything's a little food related, of course. And then I will say the candle is food scented. So
oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, I love that. And we'll continue to watch and see your journey continue to evolve. We're gonna finish things off with a little rapid fire round, and then we have one final question for you.
Okay, great.
Network Obsessed. All right, first rapid fire question. Favorite Jewish holiday?
Definitely Passover. I love the food and all the traditions and the Seder and the challenge of cooking in the Passover rules.
Okay. Do you have a go-to family breakfast tradition?
Oh, for Yom Kippur?
Mm-hmm.
Bagels. I have two bagels. One bagel with lox, cream cheese, all the fixings. The other bagel, half egg salad, half tuna salad. I want every bagel. So
you want all of the bagels.
All that. And then some noodle kugel on the side, and I'm good to go.
All right. Next recipe you're excited to try.
Well, you know, I'm already dreaming of Hanukkah, and doing twists on latkes is one of my favorite things. So I'll definitely be working on that soon. But also, I'm a total basic fall girl. So I've already stocked up on my pumpkins. I'm going to make my daughter some pumpkin pancakes. She's getting pumpkin muffins. It's all happening. So
it's all happening.
I'm no shame.
Favorite thing for sale on your website, Modern Tribe?
Well, yeah, I have to give a shout out to my own Hanukkah pajamas. But something that I did not design is a 7-foot tall inflatable dinosaur. And there's a unicorn, too. So there's the Dinoka and then the Unica. So, you know, there's all those like Christmas inflatables. Like, why don't we have Jewish ones?
I mean,
there might be a reason people don't want to advertise they're Jewish with a 7-foot tall unicorn. But apparently people do because they're very popular. So I love them. And you can also display them inside. They're not just for outside. So.
All right. Well, you're perfect bagel and lox. I guess I should have asked you this after the other question.
Oh, yeah. No. So I grew up in Connecticut, but we spent a lot of time in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we take the train in to Grand Central Station, we go over to Essa Bagel. They have giant bagels, so much cream cheese, which I think is the way to go. So much, so much of everything. So that, you know, I dream of their bagels all the time. I grew up eating those.
Love that. Next travel destination.
Hopefully, we haven't booked it yet. We went to Japan for my honeymoon. And it's like one of my favorite places I've ever been. And we're hoping to go back and bring our daughter. So,
fun. Well, speaking of which, favorite thing to do with your daughter?
So I love a leisurely Saturday morning. I'll let my husband sleep in. And she and I, we live in San Francisco. So we'll go like for a walk. We'll go to the farmer's market, maybe pick out something new for her to eat. And then I make breakfast. And I make like the same thing for us both to eat. So we kind of make breakfast together. And
Cute. She's
always trying to she's trying to eat things right away. So I just like, you know, shove something in her mouth. And then we have breakfast, I have my coffee, and I kind of tell her what we're going to do for the weekend. And, you know, we have our little morning chat. So
it's so fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. Yeah.
It's your guys' little special time. I love that.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah.
All right. So final question. And this is not rapid fire. You can take as long as you want on this. And there are no rules. And so the question is, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we want you to kind of take us through the day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, of course. You can travel, time travel. Anybody can cook these meals. You can cook them, whatever you want to do. There's no rules. It's just like your ideal day of food.
Yes, I love this question. There's just so many different directions we could go. I'm not going to go totally Jewish food because I do eat a lot of other food, too.
Okay, fair.
So I'm going to start right here in San Francisco where I live. I've got to get dim sum. We grew up eating a lot of dim sum. It's just one of my favorite traditions, even though it's not my tradition. We'd go and, you know, you'd wait for your turn. It just was an all day event. So one of my favorite places in Chinatown in San Francisco is Great Eastern. Their food is just amazing. And I'm also assuming I have unlimited appetite. So I'm just eating like everything.
Yes. And calories
there.
Don't count.
Calories never count. So it's not a concern of mine. But I do get full. So we're going to start there. Usually I have dim sum. I'm like good for the rest
of the
day.
You're done for the day.
Yeah, but not this time. This time now we're going to fly for lunch.
Okay.
So my husband and I lived in Puerto Rico for a few years. Right after we met, he got a job opportunity in Puerto Rico. And he said, I won't go unless you'll come with me. And I said, Claro, let's go. So we lived there for a few years and I do really miss all the food there. So I'm going something very simple. We're just getting an alcapurria on the beach there. That's like a fried yucca like stick, and it's either filled with crab or ground probably beef or pork. So I'm going non-kosher. I'm getting the crab one. So it's the best one.
Sounds like a perfect beach snack.
Yes.
For sure.
And I'm going to add in a cocktail.
Definitely.
So my husband, so people are always like, you know, same probably with you. People are like, oh my God, you're so lucky to be married to Amy. I'm like, actually, my husband cooks more than me and he's a really good cook. He's been doing, since I've had a baby, he's been doing all our cooking pretty much. Like, so I do like maybe one meal a week, and then I do all the, I feed the baby, right? So I do that.
You've got an important job.
I've got an important job. So I'm like, no, I'm the lucky one. And He cooked for me on our third date, which is really like people would never cook for me. They were scared. So I was like, this guy's got guts. I'm very impressed with him. So I didn't have time to get a whole meal in for him, but he makes the best banana daiquiris. So I'm going to have him make a banana daiquiri that I can enjoy on the beach while I'm eating my alcapurria in Quiñones, Puerto Rico, which is where they have the best alcapurria, I think.
Okay.
So then after that, we're going to keep flying to Japan. So that's where we went on our honeymoon. I've been wanting to go to Japan for years, and I really worked it up in my head. I was like, what if I'm disappointed? I'm like, no, it's the best place on earth. Like, we were in Tokyo, Kyoto. We went to this little onsen town and swam with monkeys and the snow.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just like, everywhere we went was the best, and people were so nice. And the food, we did not have a bad meal. But the best meal was a 30-course omakase dinner at Sushi Tomoki that was like, people were like, we were the only non-Japanese people there. And people were like, how did you find out about this place? You know, they're like, who let you in here? And like, our hotel, like concierge shop set it up. It was incredible. Again, like so nice. Everything was so seasonal and like so specific. Like at the end, they were like, here's an orange that was picked because today is the peak day for oranges. And like this one we got from the best tree of the best orchard.
Wow.
And it was the best orange I've ever had. So everything was like that. It was like incredible. And then I thought I have to include a family recipe. So for dessert, I'm going to go back to Worcester, Massachusetts, and I'm going to bring back my great grandma and we're going to make some rugla together.
Aww.
She'll probably want cinnamon, but I'll insist on chocolate. So we'll have both. And that's what we'll have for dessert.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic food day. It's been so much fun just hearing your story and your journey and continued success in the future.
Thank you so much. I love chatting with you.
You can watch Amy's episodes of Served Family Style on foodnetwork.com. And make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.